This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
And good afternoon, everyone. Linda Swain back with you on Target. Thanks to Carrie Hodder for filling in yesterday. I understand we had a bit of a musical interlude, but that's fine and dandy, sure. Especially when everything is so heavy these days, isn't it? Everything is so heavy. Anyway, we like to keep it light from time to time, keep you entertained, and also keep you informed. So stay tuned, because I think you're going to like this one. It used to be known as the Office of the Ombudsman. It's a public advocate who is charged with investigating public complaints, particularly as it relates to a perceived violation of a person's rights by a government or public body. Bradley Moss was appointed to a 6-year term as the province's citizens representative nearly 2 years ago, after nearly 2 decades in the office. And here to discuss the role of the citizens representative and some of the things he does is none other than Bradley Moss. Hello.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for the opportunity to come on today.
Well, thanks for coming on. Well, the first time I became aware of you and what you do as citizens rep, because I've dealt with a few of them over the years, was when you presented your investigation into Newfoundland Liquor Corporation.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember our reporter at the time, Brian Medore, came back and he said, "Wow, this guy doesn't pull any punches." Do you call them as you see them?
Try to, you know, that's what they're all relying on me for. Try not to sugarcoat issues. I'm not a person who gets into too much of the flowery language or anything, and try to call it as I see it, yeah.
So what is the Office of the Citizens Rep for anybody who doesn't know?
Well, it's a neutral, politically impartial office of the legislature. We are here to receive and investigate complaints. You know, there are a number of different types of ombudsmen. But most often when we talk about ombudsmen, we're referring to the classical or legislative ombudsman, who's basically a person appointed by a parliament or a legislature, who's an officer of that body. So in the Newfoundland Labrador context, you know, there's six of us officers of the House of Assembly, or stat officers, as we're referred to sometimes, as myself, my colleagues, the Privacy Commissioner, Child and Youth Advocate, Chief Electoral Officer and Commissioner for Legislative Standards, the Auditor General, of course, and the Seniors Advocate, who you've been running all morning on your news program. So you'll find same or similar groups like that in all provincial territories, all provinces and territories, except for PEI and Nunavut.
How long have we had a citizens' representative office?
Well, we've had two, actually. We had a what was called a parliamentary commissioner back in the day. It was a gentleman by the name of Ambrose Peddle. And Ambrose operated an office here on Elizabeth Avenue in St. John's from 1975 to 1990. And then in 2001, the office was recreated after there was an 11-year hiatus with no office. And the House passed the Citizens Representative Act in December of 2001, and the office as we know it today opened in February of 2002.
And you've been around in that office ever since, is that correct?
First permanent employee hired. Walked in off the street on my 30th birthday.
Wow, you're telling too many tales here now. So what has been your role over the years? Has it changed very dramatically?
Well, I guess you could say I worked my way up through staff. I started out as what was called back then an investigator researcher specialist, and then I was promoted to senior investigator and spent a couple or 3 years there. And then there was a deputy position created, which I competed for and got, and then I served for over 10 years as Barry Fleming's deputy, and then there was a public competition for this job back in 2018, and I made it through that process, and I was appointed right before the last election was called in 2019. It was like the last thing the House did before they got up and dropped the writ.
Aw, you're not an afterthought, though.
Certainly not. But my mother, who I know is listening today, she contacted me not long after because Mike Harvey, my colleague, is the privacy commissioner. Mike got appointed, and of course, this was during the election period, and so there was some media coverage of that. And VOCM put this this media photo of Mike up online, you know. And my mother called me and said, they put such a nice picture of that man up on the website, but they didn't do that for you. And I said, oh, it's okay, Mom. Don't worry about it.
Oh, getting your digs in on behalf of your mom. I got it. Well, we'll make sure we've got a really nice, portrait of you next time we have a story from you, for your mom, of course. So the kinds of complaints that you take, obviously there's a report, an investigation is conducted, and if necessary, a report is made. Are they always public?
No. Most of the time, this is a private investigative service, so I'm dealing in confidence with Linda Swain, who's complained about, you know, Department XYZ, and, you come to us in confidence. Our communications are private. I'll send you a letter or an email from time to time. When the day comes that the report is ready, you'll receive a report, and the department, that we've investigated, will receive a report, and that's generally how it's done. From time to time, yes, we would issue public reports, but the majority of them are private.
And so what determines whether or not something actually does go public? Is it, do you weigh the public interest in a particular case?
Yeah, the Citizens Representative Act is pretty specific about that. If, in my opinion, it's a matter of public interest, that I'm free to make it public. However, I would never do that without, first consulting with an individual if it's, in the case of a private investigation. So, we're really careful about preserving the integrity of our confidential process. And, so that's why, most times, when you ask the ombudsman a question about an ongoing investigation, they're not often able to confirm or deny type thing.
Generally speaking, how long do these investigations take?
A formal investigation can run anywhere from, I would say, a month to a year. All depends on what's out there in terms of evidence. We do a lot of work informally. That is to say, that there wouldn't be a formal investigation if the matter seems to be cut and dried enough to be able to solve it without going through that letter-writing campaign. And let's face it, I mean, in a lot of cases, time is of the essence. When you're dealing with marginalized populations, for instance, it's no good for me to say to somebody, in 10 months I'll have this figured out, when in fact, your benefits are running out next week, or you're about to be evicted from public housing or what have you. So we divide them between what we call inquiries, which would be these short order cooking type of matters, and then formal investigations that will take time, involving interviewing witnesses, visiting sites, taking photographs, reviewing documents, these types of things.
My guest today on Target is Citizens Representative Bradley Moss. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today on Target is Citizens Representative Bradley Moss. And we've been talking a little bit about the Citizens Representative's office and what exactly is done there. So what kind of complaints, generally speaking, do you take?
Well, we're typically an office of last resort, Linda. Our intake process will determine, if we can help, or if you have an available statutory appeal or method of having your complaint adjudicated, for example, at the Human Rights Commission or, RNC Public Complaints Commission, for instance. But, we have a fairly wide jurisdiction across departments, Crown corporations, and other public bodies. We're pretty well positioned to refer your matter out if, there is another more appropriate organization to deal with it. But we do a fair amount of work on the social side of government. So, income support, social housing. We do a fair amount of work in corrections. I'm charged with oversight for all of the lockups and correctional institutions. So we see a fair amount of traffic coming out of the correctional institutions. You know, we do work in Crown Lands, Service NL, you know, motor vehicle registration, vital statistics. You know, they've got some regulatory enforcement agencies and things. MON and CONA are under my jurisdiction. Legal aid, some of the health, not some, but all of the health authorities as well are assigned to my office. So, you know, most all of these cases under the Ombudsman program involve what we would call complaints about matters of administration. So issues that arise from the deputy minister on down to the front line. I don't take on the big, you know, oil deals or hydro projects or these types of things. Most of it is where the rubber hits the road with the bureaucracy. So, you know, a lot of that involves issues like delay, miscommunication, you know, errors or misinterpretations of policy. In many of those cases, we can sort those things out, like I described earlier, just by making some informal inquiries on the citizen's behalf, you know, clear the logjam, that kind of thing, without formal investigation. You know, the citizen wants it done quickly, government wants it done quickly, so they fix the problem and everyone moves on.
So this is, you know, a layperson, for a want of a better word, their dealings with some of these government bodies. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's where it stems from?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a role do you have? Is it semi-judicial or...?
Well, it's kind of like an umpire. it's a ball or a strike, you know. But I don't have any order power. So unlike a judge that can enforce, you know, action to be taken, what I have to do is make recommendations. And so those recommendations are always evidence based. They're always done, you know, on the basis of research and things like that. And we tend to use like moral suasion as our big stick. So, you know, we point out all the reasons why this person has been, you know, steamrolled for one reason or another, and we sort of encourage the government to, or the department to take the steps to correct it and then fix anything that, you know, may be existing from a systemic perspective that gave rise to that complaint. So the circumstances, you know, germane to that complaint hopefully would go away.
Are you ever called upon by government itself or some of these agencies?
How so?
Well, I'm thinking in terms of somebody has filed a complaint, they don't know the process, they haven't called your office specifically, but they've contacted, let's say, Eastern Health, for want of a better word. And I know they have their own processes, but do they ever say, okay, this is not really in our purview, you got to go this way?
Absolutely, yeah. Most of the line departments and some of the bigger, you know, ABCs, they're familiar with our work. So, you know, they'll say, look, here's our decision. You know, if you're dissatisfied or you think that you've been treated unfairly, you know, you can go and speak to the citizen's rep office, and you know, the service is free, and they'll provide the referral numbers. Yeah.
And you are also the investigative arm of the House of Assembly?
Yes, I've got some business lines over at the House of Assembly as well. So over and above, you know, investigating and mediating public complaints, I've got jurisdiction over the whistleblower program that's applicable to the legislature. So that's Part 6 of the House of Assembly Accountability, Integrity and Administration Act. It's a mouthful. And also I do the Public Interest Disclosure and Whistleblower Protection Act, which is the government-wide program, and I'm the named investigator under that. And as well, in April of 2020, we were assigned the harassment-free workplace policy applicable to complaints against MHAs. So that's the newest expansion of our mandate, and that took place last year.
So that's a lot.
Yeah, keeps us busy.
Generally speaking, how many of those cases are under that whistleblower? Because I know we had been seeking that type of legislation for quite some time. How much of that falls under the whistleblower's side of the legislation?
Yeah, so we'll probably get between 6 and 20 whistleblower inquiries a year. Not all of those are taken for investigation. We'll migrate some of them over to the Citizens Representative Act. That is to say, you don't meet the threshold test for investigation under a whistleblower program, but we still think that this complaint is valid and we want to examine it on a bit of a lower level, because the whistleblower legislation anticipates, you know, gross mismanagement in violation of, you know, a law of a Parliament of Canada. You know, you're talking about referrals to law enforcement in some cases, you know, so it's, you know, the stakes are generally higher in those whistleblower complaints, and they tend to involve someone throwing a gauntlet at someone higher in authority. So not all of them fit those tests, but between 6 and 20 we'll receive a year.
Did you traditionally used to get those types of whistleblower complaints, even though we didn't have a legislation to identify them specifically, if you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes, we would have people call, and, you know, we would, if we could make it work under the Citizens Rep Act, we would. The Citizens Rep Act does anticipate misconduct on behalf of a public official. So even if we couldn't back then, we would generally put that on the radar of somebody in Confederation Building who would be in a position to fix that, or provide them with, bare bones information based on, with consent of the person who's calling, obviously, bare bones information about what may be going on in such and such of a depot, wherever else, and that is probably something that should be followed up on, and we would just leave it to them.
Whether it's a complaint to the citizens rep or through the whistleblower legislation, it requires a fair bit of investigation, I would imagine. What do those investigations look like, generally speaking? Do you tend to do a lot of interviews, that kind of thing?
It starts with a notice to the respondent agency. So once we've satisfied ourselves that we have jurisdiction, that the complaint belongs here, we'll draft up what we call a notice of intent to investigate, and that'll let the senior department head, usually a deputy minister or CEO, let them know that we've got this complaint and that we're investigating it. We'll set out the allegations, give them an opportunity to respond in writing. And then we'll ask for, the evidence, so all documents, papers, things, audio, video, photographs, policy work. We tend to do a fair amount of cross-jurisdictional research, so we want to know what the landscape looks like in, other provinces of Canada or throughout the Commonwealth even. We've cast some pretty wide nets in that respect. So once that research piece is done and the documents are in, then we would hold that evidence up against the allegations. And there's a test contained in the Citizens Representative Act that, basically says, if in my opinion I believe that this action is unfair, oppressive, discriminatory, there's a whole slew of terms there in Section 37, then that I would form that opinion and provide a report to the respondent department and the person who complained. And in some cases, I say, yep, there's something here and this needs to be fixed and you need to rectify or provide redress for this individual. Or we write back and we say, they followed the rules and you're really not being treated differently than anyone else in a similar circumstance. And, that does a couple of things. It provides the department with some reassurance that what they're doing over there is, following the rules or whatever else. That's the main one, that you would provide some reassurance to a public servant who's been impugned by these sorts of allegations. We would let the citizen know, obviously, there is a written reporting obligation in the Act that would say that I would write them back and explain the case, provide the report.
It seems to me that under the whistleblower side of things, there must be a lot of overlap there. There's got to be overlap with the grievance process through unions and those kinds of things. Do you find yourself working with a lot of other different agencies as well?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, because you're trying to square whether or not in a situation like that, is this a collective bargaining issue? Is it something that is better off? Is a better fit somewhere else? You're trying to do a little bit of detective work, and a lot of that comes, though, from the person who's making the complaint. So we'll ask them those types of questions. Where else have you been with this complaint? Who have you told about it? Have you spoken to a lawyer about it? These types of things to try to square it, such that if we're going to move in a whistleblower case, usually we've got all that homework done, and we're satisfied that there's an upfront case to proceed.
So you have had a few that have proceeded and concluded. What came out of those, generally speaking, if you can talk about
that? Yeah, well, see, not so much at liberty to discuss those. I mean, we do publish annual reports on our activities under the Public Interest Disclosure and Whistleblower Protection Act. And what you'll see there is basically what the allegation was in terms of, it's gross mismanagement with respect to funds. and then here's what we did with it. We either kept it or we referred it out or we migrated it over to the ombudsman side. But the details of those types of things I wouldn't be able to get into. But, you know, suffice to say that we were satisfied on the front end that there was something going on. And, you know, I said recently publicly that the public service does a really good job. When they're notified of these things, a lot of times they don't know this type of thing is going on, and they act pretty swiftly to fix those problems, because it's in everybody's best interest if those types of behaviors are corrected.
And we're talking about a lot of human psychology here too, I suppose, with whistleblower legislation. I mean, there's many times I would imagine that somebody might say to themselves, I'm not sure I like what's going on here, but who am I going to tell? I'll only get fired for it or get demoted or something like that. Is that helping to protect those people to point out something when something is not quite right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we would encourage anybody who's having those types of, thoughts to come and talk to us in confidence. It doesn't have to go anywhere. You can vent those types of things to us. And, you know, over the years, I've dealt with a lot of, you know, like abc123@gmail.com. And, you know, I'm inquiring about the whistleblower program. You know, they're not even telling me where they work, but they just want to know a little bit about what the protections are. And then you get them to a place where they'll disclose where they work, and then you'll get them hopefully to a place where they're ready to make a formal disclosure, based on, I guess, their judgment of whether or not they can trust the process. But I've always said, for anybody who's seeing those types of things in their workplace, you know, call in, speak to one of our investigators. You don't have to identify yourself on the front end. Now, you know, this is not a case where you can just, drop two or three vague accusations and walk away and hope something gets done. I mean, we do rely on them to be able to provide some evidence on the front end that what they're talking about is actually taking place. But, it doesn't matter. The call is free and the call is confidential.
Do you find that's a big part of your job, sort of overcoming that level of perhaps distrust or fear?
Yeah, we put as much information as we can up on the website. So there's like a whistleblower frequently asked question thing. You know, I mean, you don't even have to talk to us to get a feel for, you know, what the process looks like, and, you know, whether your name will be used and these types of things. Most of that stuff is all answered through the publicly available documents on the website.
My guest today on Target is Citizens Representative Bradley Moss. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Bradley Moss. He's the Citizens Representative. Some people used to know it as the Ombudsman's Office. You've been there for a while, Bradley. Have the complaints changed over the years that you've seen?
Yeah, well, this is something that actually came up not too long ago in one of our staff meetings. We were discussing how it just seems nowadays that, I guess, the complaints that we're receiving have multiple layers to them. So, you know, for instance, you could have, and I'm just pulling a random example out, a made-up one, you could have, say, a single mom, okay, and she is living in a city-owned apartment, and she receives federal and provincial benefits. She receives a disability benefit. She has a federal and provincial student loan that she's trying to pay back. She is a victim of violence. You see where I'm going with this? It's something that takes more than just a unidirectional approach, because you're looking at somebody whose degree of reliance on three levels of government in a case like that is quite high, and you're trying to parse out exactly what it is you can do to help that's within your jurisdiction. And look, Linda, so many times I was having a discussion with the New Brunswick Ombudsman not too long ago, and this actually came up, that you kind of wish that you could just put on a cape and swoop into a case like that, tell that person to lay all their troubles aside and that you'll fix it all, but you just can't. Just because of the limitations on your jurisdiction, so they've become more complex over the years. As for issues, corrections, it It's a 24/7 operation. It doesn't close for anything, and you know, you got well over 200 people congregated there between staff and inmates. So that's going to generate complaints as well. So, you know, corrections complaints, I think, will always be with us in some form or another. There's a high turnover of inmates as well. So, you know, there are some recurring issues, but I can't say that they're as quite as simple as they used to be.
Is it a dispassionate role, or do you get to know the people that you're dealing with?
Well, you do. You get to know them, and you know, you're trying to keep you know, some degree of arm's length between you. But when someone's coming into your office for, you know, the 12th or 15th time or whatever, and you already know based on previous interventions, you know, what their life story is, you're now just dealing with what happened to them last week, and so you don't need to get up to speed. You don't need a whole lot of time to get up to speed with individuals who bring those types of problems forward.
Do you ever find yourself, you know, thinking back over the years, saying to yourself, I wonder how they ever made out? You know, did they do okay with the recommendations we made, you know?
Absolutely. You can't do this work over a long period of time without thinking about the people that you could help or couldn't help over the years. And, you know, my staff here, they exist in, you know, a 5-day a week blizzard of complaint, right? Nobody picks up the phone and calls you because they're so happy, so happy to call your office. Everybody who calls us, you know, whether it's, you know, something, some slight aggravation or, you know, a personal health or financial crisis, you know, you've got to remain, I guess, professional, but it is, you know, just, it's so hard not to empathize with some of these individuals who call in. And I'm blessed, actually, because I've got a number of social workers here on staff, and because we do a bulk of our work on the social side, it's been a natural sort of progression towards getting social work expertise and that social work lens on staff. And so, you know, they're really good at as well at decompressing, you know, so if you're having a particularly difficult conversation or whatever, I mean, we can't talk about our work with our families or our friends or anything. We're all sort of sworn to confidentiality. So, you know, you can only work out your problems with those who are here in the hallway with you. So, some of those cases, they really do stick.
Do many of the complaints you get, are they frivolous in nature, or is there a vetting process before it gets to you?
Well, I can say to you, Linda, we've got those words, frivolous and vexatious, in our legislation. And in my 19 years here, we have never invoked that. We've never gone back to someone and said, no, here's a section of our act that says this is vexatious and frivolous what you're bringing to us. You know, it's been a mantra here over the years, never to minimize anyone's particular complaint. You don't know where they're coming from. And so we've never invoked that section of the act. That's not to say that, you know, as you get down the road a little ways, you know, you start to see holes in the allegations. But no, I wouldn't refer to anybody's complaint as frivolous or vexatious, despite the fact that I won't.
Do any of the issues that you deal with not get resolved?
Sure. I mean, like I said earlier, there's some things that you just can't fix, and so you try to make the most of you know, the tools in the toolbox to get this person through the next little while, or you know, patch up something to help them along the road a ways. But you know, it's a lot of times they'll return, and you know, sometimes. People are masters of their own misfortune, but other times it's just that they're in a cycle, and it's really difficult to extricate them from that cycle.
What warrants an investigation?
Oh, I think it's something that we would generally, you know, as a group, decide that this is not something that we can work out in short order, or we're trading in highly confidential information or heightened personal information or health information. That's not the type of thing usually that you can sort out over the phone. So, you know, we'll commiserate among ourselves to say, no, I think we should really move forward with an investigation on this one. I don't think that this lends itself to a quick resolution.
And do you generally have any difficulty getting the information you're looking for? I mean, I know you're not buddy-buddy with everybody up there, but, you know, do you generally have a good rapport so that people say, yes, I get you that right away, or do you have a little bit more of a fractious kind of thing going on?
Oh, with the public service, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think we have a great relationship, and we've worked really hard to cultivate a good trusting relationship with the public service. It was difficult in the early days because nobody was sure quite what our mandate was, over in Confederation Milling. But, you know, over the years, I think they've come to see us as, an oversight body, no different than the Auditor General or the Privacy Commissioner, that they have a duty to cooperate. And they, you know, their responses are generally fulsome, and, you know, there hasn't been too many cases where we've had to go back and say, oh, no, it looks like there's something missing here. You know, you're not being quite forthright with us. We get really good feedback. We go out a couple of times, you know, like as part of our strategic plan and things to go out and see what the perceptions are in the public service of our office. And, you know, we get pretty good grades for, you know, just our ability to recognize that they're working around their own problems and that they're, you know, working as hard to get this stuff for us as they can. We don't necessarily have, you know, fiery correspondence or fiery phone calls with them. It's generally a pretty respectful relationship, and we worked hard to cultivate that.
So it's not like Dr. Nick Riviera, you know, oh no, the coroner.
Well,
I hate that guy. So they don't, it's not like they see you coming. Oh.
Well, I don't know if that's the response, it's not being said to my face. I realize that offices like ours, you can be viewed as the skunk at the picnic sometimes. But you know, they also recognize that this isn't legislation, that there's a job to do. And if it wasn't this Moss fellow here asking these questions, it would be somebody else. So, you know, it's I do get a lot of, you know, nice to talk to you, hope I never see you again.
I can understand that and appreciate that, being a journalist. My guest today on Target is Bradley Moss. He is the citizens' representative. We'll be back right after this. And when we come back, Bradley, I'll give you a little forewarning now. I'm going to ask you about some of the cases that you've dealt with, if you can, in fact, talk about any. And also the impact of COVID on what you do, coming up right after this.
Okay.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Citizens Representative Bradley Moss. We've been talking a little bit about what he does and, you know, what his jurisdiction or where his jurisdiction lies, I suppose. But has COVID presented you with any added challenges, Bradley?
Well, operationally speaking, you know, from our side of things, to the enormous credit of the staff, we've been able to stay open. And that means that, you know, there has been at least one live person in this office for the last year. And, you know, we did it by consensus. You know, it was a total team buy-in to that approach because we handle a lot of, excuse me, confidential information. A lot of it is paper-based, and people sometimes just need a big workspace to spread things out and look at them. So the staff buy-in on that was great. And as the levels came down, we repopulated the office. So, you know, I worked with a partner here for a period of time, and the rest of them worked from home. But everybody got their, you know, 3 hours or half day to come into work. And I think it meant a lot to them because you weren't just, you had something to get up in the morning for. So there wasn't a huge work from home thing for us. And we're back to a point now where we're repopulating the office again. Now, on the other side of things, you know, in terms of our relationships with government, it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, we're fortunate enough to have the space for social distancing, and you know, we're in leased accommodations, so the landlord looks after, you know, a lot of the the cleaning and things that goes on. But you know, if you can picture some of these larger cubicle farms in Confederation Building, it's difficult to repopulate that workplace. So, full credit to the Office of Chief Information Officer. Those folks, they went to work right away after the first lockdown to get as many people as possible connected. So we're not having any huge difficulties with, some of these informal mediated complaints that we're doing. On the investigation side, it's a little bit tougher because in some cases it requires somebody to go in and scan documents, and you know, their workplace might not be as open and accessible as they'd like it to be. So you know, we've been flexible with our timelines, and our the complainants, the citizens who come to us, they understand it. But you know, we keep trying to whip that cart along so that we're not getting too backed up, I'll say.
Has COVID affected the number of complaints you're receiving, or the kinds of complaints you're receiving? Are they up, down, about the same?
About the same. The last fiscal year is just right on par with the last three or four in terms of complaint volume.
And have those complaints changed at all because of COVID?
A little, but there's nothing that I can say is, directly COVID heavy in terms of its content. There are some frustrations, obviously, with delays and people getting calls back, things like that. But no, I mean, I don't, thankfully, I mean, I do teleconference periodically with my colleagues across the country, and the Ombudsman for Ontario, he's got 180 staff and, this $8 million budget. He's got two empty offices and office towers in downtown Toronto that he doesn't think he's going to see until next year. And they've had some real problems with their long-term care and deaths in long-term care and things like that. We've been so lucky here that we haven't, had those types of problems. And so sometimes when I hear of like outbreaks in jails, big problem federally and provincially, but here we've been able to work together to keep those numbers, pretty much non-existent in correctional facilities and long-term care.
Are you prepared, God forbid, but, those kinds of cases are presented before you? Obviously, that would require an awful lot of resources. Are you prepared in that eventuality?
I think so. We've, like I said earlier, we've got a good group here. They're really good at prioritizing issues. We can converge in small teams for larger files. So, of the nine of us that are here, we could have three or four working together on any particular. So I can formulate teams fairly quickly, and they are really good at prioritizing their work.
I know you said off the top that there's not very many cases that you can talk about, but some of them are public. Any that have made a difference in the office that you can talk about?
Oh my! Well, going back to when I first came here. I mean, one of my first assignments was to go to Badger after the flood out there, and we were getting a lot of complaints about the compensation scheme. It was a 90-10 cost-shared federal-provincial thing, and residents of Badger were pretty upset by some of the offers that they were getting. And we were able to go out and make a difference in a few people's recovery in terms of their compensation levels. I can remember doing the review of conditions for female inmates from Labrador, and some of these epic journeys that were described to us by First Nations individuals who would be, say, arrested in Nain and have to go to appear in court in Goose Bay and then be remanded into custody and have to fly in shackles to St. John's and then go to Clarenville and then do the whole thing in reverse, so that one had an impact on me, and I got an opportunity to go to Labrador, meet with some of those individuals, met with the band council in Sheshe. So that one had an impact. We did a public report on Donald Dunphy. That was a review of Mr. Dunphy's relationship with the workers' compensation regime. That one, of course, had an impact because that was running simultaneous to the public inquiry. So those stick out the most.
Wow, that's some life-changing stuff there. I mean, the impacts on people's lives are tremendous.
Yeah, and those are the ones that we're reporting on publicly, right?
So that's pretty heavy stuff. You carry a lot of, you know, gravitas with this role. How come we don't hear quite so much out of you? Is it because of the private nature of these kinds of things?
Yeah, it's really a confidential system. So you can say, well, 90% of what I do, I can't talk about, and you know that's fine. I'm here for the people who have complaints registered with our office, but I'm not a spotlight hugging type of individual anyway. So I would not want to be out there too much, because I believe that people should have a safe place to go and bring their complaints and discuss their concerns without making any major fanfare or noise out there. And in a lot of cases we're able to fix these issues, but we're not a panacea, we're not a cure-all. So there are, some cases that unfortunately, we're just not able to rectify for people. So,
is it satisfying to know that you've helped in many of these cases?
Even every now and again we'll get a card, or a telephone call from somebody, and we try to publish those in our annual report, not the actual card, but something nice that somebody would have said, I didn't know where else to go, and these types of things. We get positive and negative feedback.
Very many cases that you simply can't resolve?
As a percentage, I wouldn't be able to say whether it was, half of them or what. But there are cases where it's, for instance, it's a straight up court action. We had one not too long ago involving a dispute over land, and the Crown was only a bit player in that land, and so in that land dispute. So we had no choice but to say in that case, look, we understand that the Crown has played a role, albeit minimal. But your only redress here is via the court. And, that's not an easy thing for people. And it's not an easy thing to say when somebody's really upset. But that's the long and short of it. There is a process prescribed in law for that, and I can't circumvent that.
We only have a little over 2 minutes left, but people who are listening now and, maybe they've been sitting on something for a while or wondering where to go, how can they get a hold of your office?
Well, easiest way is to Google Citizens Representative, or you can visit our website. It's www.citizensrep.nl.ca. That's going to tell you just about everything you need to know about our office. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-559-0079. In the St. John's area, 729-7647.
Those numbers again?
1-800-559-0079. And 729-7647.
Because somebody's going to ask me as soon as we hang up the phone with you. And Bradley, a big office, a lot of people there helping you out behind the scenes?
I've got 9. So comparatively speaking within the house, I think we're the second smallest operation among the stat officers. I think we're adequately staffed. We did take on a new position specifically for that anti-harassment policy. One of the things I said to the folks over at the house was, look, if you're going to give me an intake officer for that, it's great. I'll go and hire one, but I need somebody who's going to be able to do other things when they're not, like if we don't get much of this stuff, which I hope we don't, I need somebody who's going to be versatile enough to go and look at a Crown Lands complaint or something like that. So they approved that position, and our newest staff member came on last September.
Bradley Moss, very informative. I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for reaching out, Linda. I enjoyed it.
Alrighty, and hello to Mrs. Moss. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Do join us then for another edition of On Target, and thanks for listening.